I have a dream.
One small step.
Oh, may we say,
God. The wall must go.
Diner, Princess of Wales.
Crashed into the World Trade Center.
Winner is Sydney.
This week in history.
Sunday nights always has a history flavour here on Nightlife. And so, this week in history, we have history with a literary bent. We're focusing on a mysterious tribute that was paid annually for many years to US writer Edgar Allan Poe. Now, Poe's brilliance as a short story writer, as a poet, as a critic, and as an editor means he's regarded as a central figure in US romanticism and of American literature generally. In particular, he is renowned for his cultivation of mystery and the macabre. To give you an example, here are the final two stanzas of his famous poem, The Raven. This is read by great American actor James Earl Jones.
Be that word our sign of parting, bird or fiend, I shrieked upstarting. Get thee back into the tempest and the night's plutonian shore. Leave no black plume as a token of that lie thy soul hath spoken. Leave my loneliness unbroken. Quit the bust above my door. Take thy beak from out my heart and take thy form from out my door. Quoth the raven, nevermore. And the raven, never flitting, still is sitting on the pallid bust of Pallas just above my chamber door. And his eyes have all the seeming of a demon's that is dreaming. And the lamplight o'er him streaming throws his shadow on the floor. And my soul, from out that shadow that lies floating on the floor, shall be lifted nevermore.
Imagine that was your voice. Imagine having a voice like that. That was a wonderful performance by James Earl Jones there, reading Edgar Allan Poe's The Raven. Now, although Poe lived much of his life in Richmond, Virginia, Baltimore defined the beginning and end of Poe's life, and he died in strange circumstances, aged just 40, and he's buried in the Westminster Burying Ground in Baltimore. And now, a strange tradition has become the stuff of legend amongst Poe fans. It goes back, beginning perhaps as early as the 1930s and continuing annually until 2009, a tribute was placed on Poe's grave on his birthday, January 19th, by an unknown person. This person dressed in black, wore a wide-brimmed hat and a white scarf. They would pour a glass of cognac and raise a toast to Poe's memory before vanishing into the night, leaving a distinctive arrangement of roses and the unfinished bottle of cognac at the gravesite. So, for this week in history, we're looking into the reality and the legend of what has become known as the Poe Toaster. That's a toaster as in one who gives a toast. And joining us from Baltimore is Erica Jang, Executive Director at Poe Baltimore and the Edgar Allan Poe House and Museum. Enrica, hello and welcome to Nightlife.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure. Thank you.
To set the scene for us, why would someone want to pay such a tribute annually for decades to a writer who died in 1859? Place him in the canon of American literature for us. Where does he fit?
Oh, goodness. It really is difficult to explain that just the outsized impact that Edgar Allan Poe has had on popular culture, but world literature. He is the inventor of the detective story. He's one of the first writers to write effectively in the first person of a murderer, a killer, giving us this kind of sympathetic narrator, but unreliable. And it just sparks the imagination, generation after generation. So incredibly important. Much of what he taught about short story still taught to this day. And Poe anticipates so much scholarship and his ideas about literature and his ideas about these primal subjects inspiring such emotion in the reader and the importance of such. It really is difficult to state the true impact of Poe on popular culture.
Those primal traditions you talk about, does that fit into, I suppose, what we would call romanticism with its interest in the sublime and the terrifying?
I think you could definitely say Poe had a keen interest in the sublime and the terrifying. I do think that Poe, again, believes that beauty it inspires the soul, and that these things, talking about these subjects, art is supposed to make you feel something very, very strong. And there's nothing more primal than these emotions of love and fear. He was a little commercial about it when asked why he wrote about Gothic topics. He sort of jokingly said that they sell, but there is a lot of intention in Poe's work, and very much so. That was definitely his interest.
Some writers who deal with the macabre, it's just a day job for them. But was Poe himself a dark person?
You know, there's no doubt that Poe was at times dark, but I think a lot of his humor sometimes lost. There's an entire body of work where Poe, not just short stories, not just poetry, but Poe was a book critic, vicious book critic, kind of makes his bones early in his career as an editor, making this commentary about literature, and then talking about other topics like the perfect room and a philosophy of furniture and these kinds of notions. And he's very tongue-in-cheek about these topics. In addition, perpetrating hoaxes on the public, again, writing in that first person, trying to make, almost anticipating War of the Worlds, trying to sort of generate belief in false things in his readers, and tried to perpetrate several hoaxes on the public, successfully and unsuccessfully, even a little bitter that his balloon hoax didn't take on when the other famous balloon hoax does, and then indulging in some true crime. And so much of Poe's humor, because I think young students too, you get the greatest hits, you get the Telltale Hearts, you get Cask of Amontillado, and of course those are favorites, but a lot of Poe's humor sometimes lost because of the commentary of the day. We won't necessarily understand his references, but he was funny, and you almost have to have that gallows humor in order to write effectively the horror side of things. So he did live a tragic life in some aspects, but he was highly intelligent and he was charming and funny.
It seems that every year, essentially, a new Sherlock Holmes TV show or movie come out. But as you point out, Poe invented, in many ways, the detective story, and his detective, C. Auguste Dupin, has a lot of what we might call the elements of Sherlock Holmes and predates him. Do you think it's time we got a blockbuster C. Auguste Dupin TV series on HBO?
Absolutely. That's an easy one. You always want to have, we're really looking forward to a new adaptation of House of Usher that's coming out, coming up soon on Netflix. And you see a sort of star-studded cast getting lined up for that series. So any Poe, bringing Poe to the screen, I think that people even remember fondly almost a golden age of Poe adaptations that may not have been true to the source material in all ways, but we remember perhaps the Corman and Vincent Price films. We remember these things, and I think that we're hungry for a lot more adaptation of Poe's works in the present day. I will say, though, it is fun and also a little horrifying sometimes as a historian to see Poe, the man, appear as a popular culture figure in the present day. He really is iconic in that way. And so the person himself, on the one hand, it's a pleasure to see people interested in Poe's story and to be that person, the historian at Poe House, that says, well, actually, all the things you think you know, I will tell you what you don't. That's always fun. But I do think that Poe appeared, the man himself appears in popular culture. He represents so many things. And it is fun to see that, if sometimes a little cringy.
What is the connection of Poe to Baltimore? Why does the museum exist in Baltimore dedicated to his life and work?
Well, Poe's father's family, very deep roots in the city of Baltimore. Even before there was an Edgar Allan Poe, Edgar's grandfather plays a role in the revolution American Revolution, known to George Washington, a friend of the Marquis de Lafayette. Years after the revolution, and Marquis de Lafayette returns to the United States to tour the country he had helped fight for, he passes through Baltimore. He remembers the Poes by name because it's Poe's, Edgar's grandfather and grandmother, who helped marshal a number of women in the city and sewed 500 pairs of pants for the Marquis de Lafayette soldiers. So wow. You have a family, a very deep American, this is a very American story. And then also as well in the War of 1812. So the Poes were known in the city. And again, Poe's father's family from Baltimore. Now Poe's mother was an English actress, immigrated to the United States when she's 9 years old, and she is a stage performer. So the parents were traveling actors. Poe's father, raised to be something stodgy like a lawyer, something boring like that, but instead attends the theater, falls in love with the theater, falls in love with this beautiful British actress, and runs away with the circus, essentially. the family, very deep roots. Now, later, unfortunately, Poe's parents die young, and Poe, as you said, raised for a majority of his youth in Richmond, Virginia. So a completely different city. However, raised by a foster family, never formally adopted by them. And so years later, when he becomes estranged from that family, he finds refuge with his blood relatives in Baltimore. And a family that came from a foster family, fairly wealthy by the end of Poe's time with them. And yet the family in Baltimore has nothing, has absolutely nothing. And yet they welcome him into their home. Poe's aunt, Maria Clem, becomes almost a surrogate mother to Poe. And she becomes his mother-in-law in point of fact, because Poe marries her daughter, Virginia, and the three of them stay a family for the rest of their lives. So the house that still survives in the city of Baltimore, 203 North Amity Street, famous because Poe finds stability there, kind of makes his chosen family there. Also, kind of pleased to say that Poe, even though we have poetry dating back to Poe's teens, and he had even self-published some poetry by the time he makes it to Baltimore, he turns to short story writing while he's at the house at Amity Street, and wins a prize for writing while he's there. And this essentially launches his professional career. So Baltimore gets to say that this is the city that discovered Edgar Allan Poe. And Poe House, as a historic site, precious historic site, built in the 1830s, and yet still standing today, and still a touchstone for so many Poe fans, and people who want to commune with the writer in many ways. That is the house where Poe begins his professional career. So that's pretty exciting.
Let's turn now to his death at the age of 40. There remains some mystery about the circumstances. What is known about it, and what is the best explanation for his death?
Sadly, even my position at Poe House, I cannot tell you what killed Edgar Allan Poe. And it's strange sometimes for people, especially in this age of forensic science, DNA evidence. Why is it that we don't know what killed Poe? And part of this is kind of, unfortunately, a product of his celebrity during his life. There is a common misconception that Poe dies in obscurity, and that's not the case at all. Now, fame did not equal fortune for any member of the Poe family, but Poe was very famous at the end of his life, especially after the publication of The Raven, and becomes a popular, almost household name. And this poem kind of sparks the imagination of the nation and the world. And you see the poem race around the world, and people just becoming fascinated with Poe as a figure. So we can lay out the timeline of Poe's death in the city of Baltimore. He was not living in Baltimore at the time, traveling through a city that he knew very well, traveling from Richmond, Virginia to New York. And his intention was to close his affairs in New York, return to Richmond. So Baltimore really was a place to catch a train, despite the fact that he had such a big connection there. However, he arrives in the city, goes missing for a period of 5 days that we still cannot account for. He's found in a tavern in filthy condition on a day when a lot of raucous goings on happening in the city of Baltimore. It's election day at that time. And Poe, in terrible condition, taken to a hospital and where he dies 4 days later. And during that time, unable to explain how he came to be in that condition. And it really, his cause of death remains a mystery, because the people at the end of Poe's life behave quite badly. Rufus Griswold is the most commonly known example of someone who really indulges in settling old scores with the dead man and character assassination. But even Poe's doctor, a man more of a administrator at the hospital where Poe dies, Dr. Joseph Moran, claims to have been Poe's attending physician, and he dines out for the rest of his life, talking about the last days of Poe. And what starts as a simple death in the hospital turns into a story of deathbed speeches and extra symptoms. He goes on tour, he writes a book, all of the things that we see today when a celebrity passes away, muddying the story so that as we start to, wait a minute, what about this forensic? What about the pinpoint reason for Poe's death? A lot of conjecture. And because of that character assassination, you have a lot of people kind of trying to swing the pendulum the other way and say that, oh, well, Poe never touched a drop of alcohol, or he would never have done this. So he must have been killed. And a little bit of that conspiracy comes out because of that. So Poe's death, truly a mystery. And again, sort of gleeful, a little ghoulish pleasure in telling people that Poe's death will likely stay a mystery, because we're not going to dig him up. We're not going to dig him up for you. Nobody's going to do that. As soon as he's topside, he's up for grabs. That's not going to happen. So.
Well, the mystery obviously contributes to the mystery surrounding what we're going to be talking about now, which is the Poe toaster ritual. When did it begin?
You know, this is itself a question of debate. You have hints of a quiet ritual that may have been going on for a very long time. And you have hints of people maybe noticing, say, something's happening with some regularity. Before I continue, I do want to say, and so that I don't have any Poe people out there who get mad at me, unfortunately, I am not privy to any other or special behind the scenes information than anybody else who wants to look into the history. Even in my position at Poe House, even as a member of the Edgar Allan Poe Society of Baltimore, I'm a scholar, just as other people are. I'm a Poe fan, just as other folks are. So I want to say that I've traced this history, but I wish I knew a little more behind the scenes stuff. But I have my own ideas about what happens. So the beginning of the legend, again, we have some mention, and we have the most specific mention sometime in 1950, where somebody says that, you know, there is a guy who, or an individual who leaves an especially nice bottle at Poe's grave, noting that it's a good quality bottle. I would say that tribute to Poe is part of the Poe tradition. Because of the character assassination at the end of Poe's life, in fact, this spurs a desire for many people who love Poe to make proper tribute. And as a consequence, Edgar Allan Poe is buried no fewer than 3 times at Westminster Hall. And the statue, a monument to Poe over time in the year from his death all the way up to 1949, you have people who are putting together committees and trying to create monuments to Poe and set the record straight, give Poe a more fitting monument. So he's moved around the cemetery. So he's given him a truer monument and headstone, the first monument ever given to an American writer in the United States, as a matter of fact, is given to Poe. So you have a grand tradition, especially in the city of Baltimore, of wanting to pay proper tribute to Poe. And even in just my short time with the Poe community in Baltimore, you see tribute almost every day left at Poe's grave, both of Poe's graves, as a matter of fact. So someone rising to the top of that tradition, commentary briefly in 1950 that something might have happened in 1949. Now, the stories of the Poe toaster really sort of capture the imagination of the country more in the 1970s. And a lot of things going on at that time, but in the Poe world and even in the city of Baltimore, in establishing Poe House as a museum, the new National Historic Landmark program at that time, a lot of attention on Poe. And so the story rises to the top and people begin to wonder about rumors of a single individual who's been doing the same thing year after year after year, coming to visit, sneaking into the cemetery, leaving roses and cognac at Poe's grave. And what do these things mean? And again, this starts to bubble up. And so people begin to hold a vigil at Westminster Hall every year on Poe's birthday to see the Poe toaster sneak into the cemetery and leave the tribute before disappearing into the night. And so that when it began, it really is hard to know, but we start to see an acceleration of these stories, an acceleration of this observance in the 1970s.
One of your predecessors, I understand, at the Poe Museum, the Edgar Allan Poe House, is thought to have some clues, but is keeping their mouth shut about them.
There are a lot of conjecture. And there are several people, as a matter of fact, you'll find in Baltimore, this is such an important part of the city's history and such a love for Edgar Allan Poe. You really, you're hard pressed to find another city that reveres a writer the same way Baltimore loves Poe. And so you have a number of people who claim to have clues or even keeping things to themselves about the toaster. And I don't doubt it. I don't doubt that there are lots of little bits and pieces of the story that come together, and popular culture gets it wrong so often, so often. So it's tantalizing, but we likely won't know unless this person decides to divulge.
Where's the tradition at today? It's been going for so long. Has there been efforts to revive it with tribute toasters or faux toasters?
Oh, yes. Okay. Well, even before it ended, you had a little bit of a flurry of faux toasters. And the people in the know were quick to point out what was wrong about the faux toast, this kind of thing. And it's a little bit like people dressing up as Santa Claus. And some Santas are better than others, kind of thing. Unfortunately, the tradition stops in 2009, which happens to coincide with the bicentennial of Edgar Allan Poe's birth, 200th birthday. So for it to wrap up at that time, not in so much a shock, but a little bit sad, and it ends so quietly with just the toaster not coming, that maybe a year or two afterwards, there's still a little bit of hope, wondering what's going on, it's declared dead. Now, much more ceremonial these days. In 2016, there was a famous kind of competition in the city to crown the next Poe toaster, to make this a little bit more of a ceremonial position. And they've managed to do so every year since. Hire somebody to come out to play the violin, leave the roses, and sip some cognac and then disappear into the night. Maybe even say something in Latin. So it's a lot of fun. And if you feel like hanging out very cold January day. It's cold here. I don't know. I know it's not where you are, but a cold January evening. It is much more of a ceremony. It happens earlier in the evening, so everybody gets to go to bed sooner than they used to.
Now, the museum runs a range of events relating to Edgar Allan Poe and his writing. What's on the agenda for the year 2022?
Well, we're very excited that over the last few years, and even with the pandemic, we've been able to keep some of these new traditions alive. The International Edgar Allan Poe Festival and Awards, this will be the fifth year for the festival in Baltimore. And that's usually in October, close to Poe's death day, October 7th, 1849 is when he died. And 2 days of books, music, performances. It's an outdoor event, and we have performers and vendors and food, and just a celebration of all things Edgar Allan Poe, culminating in our special gala, the Black Cat Ball, where we crown the winners of our Festival Awards, the Saturday Visitor Awards, recognizing a new generation of artists and writers inspired by Poe. So that's a lot of fun, and I look forward to the festival every year. This year in 2022 is a very special year. This is the bicentennial of Virginia Poe, Edgar Allan Poe's child bride and a very controversial figure in Poe's history, but an opportunity to share some Poe scholarship and look at some of these topics that are shadowy and vague at times when it comes to Poe, but an opportunity to chat. And we're really looking forward to our collaboration with the Poe Museum in Richmond, as well as the Poe Cottage in New York, and the Poe Studies Association, as well as the Edgar Allan Poe Society of Baltimore. So very pleased to honor Virginia Poe, a sometimes obscure figure, but fascinating, especially when it comes to Poe scholarship.
Well, my name is Mark Sutton. This has been This Week in History. We've been discussing Edgar Allan Poe and the Poe toaster, who left cognac and flowers on the writer's grave for decades and remains a mystery, and of course the enduring legacy of Edgar Allan Poe for the people of Baltimore. I'd like to thank my guest, Enrica Jang, Executive Director of at Poe Baltimore and the Edgar Allan Poe House and Museum. Thanks, Erica. Enrica.
Thank you very much for having me. Have a good one.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.